welcome to Whispers on AM 1600 WKKX and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. My name is Nick Queen. We have Lola Miller over in the booth and Jordan Klein somewhere near the beach. Are you there, Jordan?
I'm here.
You cause any problem, I'll dump you as quick as your high school sweetheart.
Ooh, that's fast.
That was very fast.
That was pretty quick.
Yeah, you're at the beach. We've had to deal with hell, wind, lightning. It was crazy.
You saw the video. I was outside, and it's like, I want to say, like 80s right now. Nice.
Can you hang up on him now? Yeah. That's just sad. It's like 50 here. Let me see. What is the temperature? It says 74. It feels like it's 50, though. It's just looking out the window now, it's kind of dreary. I don't know.
Now, how big were the hail balls?
They were pretty big at my house. Maybe a little smaller. Yeah, I don't know.
50 cents piece.
Yeah. Maybe some that were maybe golf ball size. There were some big ones hit. Well, you saw. I had the video up. I might link to that a little later. Maybe I'll upload that to YouTube. Put that on the website.
Well, I guess Lindsley got hit up. You know, Woodsdale got hit really bad too.
Yeah.
So, and all we got was some rain downtown. That was it.
Really? Oh yeah. Man. Yeah. Nick was showing me a little bit of the video earlier today, and it looked like the apocalypse was happening.
Well, I showed him my out because I didn't record out back. I mean, the outback, because the apartment buildings I live in, we have a little slab, you know, concrete slab for the back porch. It had flooded up. I mean, it's maybe a couple inches deep. I mean, under a minute, and was flowing into my back, you know, into where my kitchen is a little bit. You know, kind of the wind was hitting it up. I left the door open just so I could go grab the computer. He was on Skype. I was like, you got to see this. And I had, you know, hell balls like blow through my door into my living room. I mean, it's easily 7-8 feet.
Yeah.
It was a mess. So front door, it would look like it was, went, you know, Christmas.
Well, let me tell you what he did, Lola.
What?
What he really did, he just grabbed a bunch of marshmallows and was throwing them. Look at all this.
Look at it.
And he's just wanting pity. That's how it rolls.
Yeah, it didn't happen. I'm sorry, Jordan.
Oh, Jordan.
You caught me.
Yes.
There was a lot of marshmallows. Well, we got our guest on there.
Yes, we do.
Jordan, you want to welcome our guest? Make you do all the hard work.
Sure do.
I thought he hung up.
I do, too.
Hard work.
Yeah. He's seeing that tequila sunrise out there on the patio. He's not bothering to work.
He's like, I can't do that with a drink. Go ahead, Jordan.
All right, Mr. Chad Austin has 20 years research and investigation experience, EVP research specialist and paranormalist. He's contributed to the paranormal field through the power of broadcast, research, and field experiments. You can check him out on Twitter and MySpace. Chad, you with us?
I'm here.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. How about yourselves?
Well, I'm doing great. I don't know how those West Virginia folks are doing.
Yeah, he's down in Myrtle Beach right now. So.
Oh yeah, down there in the poor country.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Pity me.
What, do you have some storms down there now, or?
Where's that in Myrtle Beach?
Yeah.
He said it's like 80 and sunny.
I've got great weather.
Working on a tan.
Yeah.
We're the ones with the storms. He left us while the storms, you know, came through, and he'll come back when it's over.
Just good. The
kind of person he is. So tell us about, you said, you were telling me earlier, you just came back from an investigation, right?
Yeah, I was out over the weekend. I like to, you know, stay as active as possible. Let me preface that by saying, you know, people hear all about the places in the media that you hear about now, say, for instance, and I'm not discrediting any of these places, you know, Waverly Hills Sanatorium, Rolling Hills,
even
here in North Carolina, the USS North Carolina, the showboat, the Queen Mary, and the list goes on and on. And those were all great places. However, if you think about it, and you think about the big picture, those cannot be the only places. Those are places that have made it into mainstream media attention. And let me tell you, this phenomenon is just, it does not is not restricted to just those places. To me, the best places that you can ever possibly go are the places that have not been heard of.
Hmm.
Those are the places that grant, that give you, you know, the most mystery. They may, they're harder work because that information is not readily available. Excuse me while I turn off the washer here.
While you do that, I was rude. I wanted to yell at Jordan mainly because that's what I always do. I forgot to introduce. We also have Mr. Garrick Sturm in the studio with us. listener here.
How you doing?
I want to pounce so quickly on Jordan because he irritates me so much. I forget things.
See what I deal with, Chad, on a weekly basis.
Good, great. Well, you know what? I don't know how you do it.
Thank you.
She doesn't know either.
Yeah, I don't.
We're horrible. All right. I'm sorry.
No,
Chad, I got a question for you. What do you think it is that makes these places hit the main? Why is it that only certain places are getting it and certain aren't?
Yeah, that's pretty easy. I've been in broadcasting, television and radio for over 20 years. That is an animal into itself, another can of worms we're not going to get into. However, what happens is these places that do get heard of get sensationalized. I'm not saying that these places aren't extremely active and don't have a lot to offer. In a way, it's tragic. Let me give an example. Waverly Hills Sanatorium, a good friend of mine, Keith Age, is a person that he really brought that to the nation's attention with the help of the Booth brothers, you know, in Kentucky. And now you have people that are walking over themselves to get into a location like that. Now, that along with, okay, Eastern State Penitentiary, another place that I visited. Okay, what happens, as far as I'm concerned, is when you have this media attention, I mean, that's great, and I really hope that these historical sites do very, very well. And when I say, you know, mind you, historical sites, because the history is so much more relevant than the haunted history, if you will.
Yeah.
And what you have, like the case of like a Waverly Hills, you know, the Queen Mary and things like that, they literally get... It gets to the point where you have so many people booking so many people in those places that what happens is it gets so oversaturated. They become oversaturated ad nauseum. Now, let me back up and say, and this is really what it boils down to as far as I'm concerned. Put yourself in the place of the spirit. Now, when I pass along, and if I am able to be in the spirit realm and looking, and I have my choices of places that I want to be, okay?
Uh-huh.
I don't want to be a place that is overrun with tourists. I mean, how many ghost stories do you hear of, you know, like Cancun, Mexico, and like, just say, spring break hotspots? You know what I mean? I really don't think that's happened, although that there are exceptions. However, right now with Waverly Hills, and if you haven't been there, I do encourage you to go to check it out just for experience. But there are so many people going through there that if you think of it from a humanistic point of view, and if we truly believe that personalities survive after death, do you think these people are going to want to quote entertain or be around and really give people the time of day if you have literally hundreds of people going through a month? To me, I would pick up, I'd go to Las Vegas.
Well, I think that's how I feel about the pen that we've got here, the Moundsville Penitentiary. You know, we went with 30 people. And, you know, we were tripping over each other, let alone spirits, you know. So, yeah, I can understand. Really, you know, we give them credit of being thoughtful and creative in some cases. So why wouldn't they be just as disgusted with idiots as we are?
No, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And one thing that is lost, and I think a lot of it might have to do with you know, just the phenomenon it is in pop culture right now.
Yeah.
I'm from the time where this stuff was taboo. I remember going into my my counselor's office in high school that, you know, that was helping me plan on my future. And he asked me what I wanted to do, and I told him parapsychology.
He looked at like you were crazy.
Did he laugh at you or
not? He didn't know what it is before he could even laugh at me.
Yeah.
He didn't know what it was. And he looked in his book. He's like, I don't see that. Can he explain? And I tried to explain. It was, you know, the study, you know, of the human mind and the unknown.
That's one I was.
And he's like, well, Chad, have you ever thought about being a social worker? you know what I mean? Understandable. But my point being is, it was a time, and I think y'all can relate, where it was taboo. I was, you know, 12 years old, digging knee deep in Hans Holzer, knee deep in Stagger, and people that were publishing these books. This is the stuff that I was looking at. I was looked at as a weirdo. You know what I mean? People, you know, this, oh, come on now, you know, and we're in a very much, you know, it was very much a time, well, if you can't hit it with the hammer, then it must not be possible.
Yeah. And even now, even though it's, pop culture, it's still kind of, you know, it's like, oh, it's fun and everything, and then who cares after that? You know, that's kind of crazy. You had a question, Garrick?
Yeah, I was just wondering, with all them people going in and out, wouldn't that hinder any, like, the EVP work or anything like that? I mean, wouldn't it kind of disrupt some of the spirit, you know, activity in them places with that many people in there?
Sure. There's a couple ways to look at that. From a commonsensical point of view, when you have so many people in there, when they're running a group in the next floor on the fourth floor, and you and your group are on the third floor, you're gonna have contamination left and right.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. Yes, it makes it extremely hard. You can still work around it, but you know, you're still gonna get stuff that you can't, you know, with your, and if you're true to yourself, and that is such a big point. If you're true to yourself before you put something out there, it may seem creepy as all get out. But if you can't count things out, if you can't say, well, you know, there was somebody up there that could have been this X, Y, Z, you know, and are true to yourself, that's the bottom line. There are people that unfortunately don't really care. They just want to throw this stuff out there in order to elevate, for some reason, themselves as an investigator. And it's so very useless.
Yeah, there are way too many cutthroat people out there in this field.
Oh, yep. Cutthroat is another, that's a whole another can of worms, brother. That is a whole another can of worms. But to me, and you know, I'm not trying to get famous. I'm not trying to do anything except answer questions for myself. And if things happen, they happen. You know, I'm not worried about, you know, I love, you know, the reason I like doing radio interviews is to speak with like-minded people. And that is great stuff. That is gravy to me. People that are in it for the right reasons. And, don't get me wrong. The television and everything like that, it serves a purpose. It does. It's entertainment. Take it as such. I don't have bad things to say. Really about it, but unfortunately there's a lot of people that take that as word.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is, and they take that and unfortunately they use it in the field, and that is not helpful whatsoever. I honestly can't wait for this wave of popularity to subside, because you know what, that is going to separate the people that are truly interested from the people that are fair weather and on the bandwagon for now, because you know what, if there's not a TV show.
Yeah, just trying to earn a buck or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Earn a buck and everything like that. I mean, there's so many wrong reasons why people are in this, you know, and inflating their egos or think this is a means to get famous or means to make money. Oh boy, you're on the wrong track. That's the one you're going down.
We can back that up as well. I think Jordan had a question.
I got kind of a two-parter, and it goes back to what we were saying beforehand about like the tourist destinations.
Yeah.
Don't ghosts have to use like the energy? Can't they, like a more populated area, can't they suck up more energy to manifest what they need?
Yes.
And what about places like New Orleans? It's such a haunted hotspot, but
ooh,
it's also a big tourist destination.
Ooh, New Orleans. That, I would love to get down there and, that is good stuff. And yeah, And I really have to be calculated when I answer that question, because it does has nothing to do with the number of bodies and the number of people with pulses that are in there. It has to do with intent and mindset, okay? If you go in with 100, you know, with say 100 people, and they're ready to go and they want to have this experience that they've never had before, and they're digging and they're reaching and they're doing to have that experience, and they could come up with nothing. You can go in there with 4 people that are centered, focused, and have the correct mindset. And to me, one thing that separates it is I really don't like the term ghost hunting. Okay, you know, sometimes investigation is really a stretch. How many of us have a criminal, a criminal investigation background? Not too many, which is not a bad thing. What I like to, the term I like to use is conscious observer.
Ooh, that is good.
That is what we do when it comes down, when it boils down to the common denominator, that's what we do. You know what I mean? We don't dust for prints. We don't do, you know, you can have all the bells and whistles, thermal cam, this and that, the goggles, the shiny blinky things and everything like that. But if you're in there and your mind is right and you're in a place where you just want to,
connect with something?
Connect, yes. And you know what? And it has a lot to do with, too, you're going to reel, use a fishing analogy, you're going to reel in, you're going to come home with an empty stringer many times, okay?
Yeah.
And that is the fact. That is a fact. That is just a plain-out fact. But if you go in there with the mindset that you're calm, cool, and collected, and you just want to have a conversation, you're not there to answer pressing questions and things like that gets me irritated. I was at this past weekend. How did you die?
Yeah.
Did it hurt? And things like that. I literally had to get up and walk away. I had to get up and walk away. I did, because I just cannot, you know, when I try to explain this in advance, and not that I think that my way is the best way, but you know what? I've been doing this long enough and I know what works. And to me, just listen to your heart. Turn off the boob tube. Turn off the television. Pick up a book. Listen to what your heart would say.
Yeah.
Book? You know what I'm saying? I mean,
what are you talking about when you say book? I'm sorry.
Never mind, Nick.
That it died.
Yes, it did. It died a slow, angry death.
Very, very painful. Yes.
You know, all books are good, but you know what? There's a lot of great stuff. Pick up some Rosemary Ellen Guiley. You know what I'm saying? Pick up some books that are worth their salt.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, you mentioned you used to read Hans Holzer, Brad Steiger, was that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? I mean, you said Rosemary Gill. Anybody else that you would recommend? What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now?
Sure.
Right now, I'm reading for the probably third time. Recently, I've been really stuck on EVP and IPC because that is my concentration. That, I think, is going to be the next thing where we really break some ground. I don't think it's going to be photography. I really don't. Alexander McCrae has a book. He's a Scottish person, gentleman, and he has a book called EVP and New Dimensions. And Alexander McCrae comes from a science background, and he has some technology that he uses where he's come up with some really outstanding, really, really outstanding results. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about reading his book several times over. I have a very close association in Scotland with a gentleman by the name of Mark Turner of Ghost Finders Scotland, and whom I visited. And I spend time in Scotland because, let me tell you what, if I was a swinging bachelor, I would live in Scotland. I mean, I really would, because that place is just so entrenched in just some incredible history. Alexander McRae is a Scot. My friend Mark Turner, for several years now, we've been discussing that and work of people from across the world. And quite honestly, Europeans have a very much more intense and serious, a very much more intense and serious study of ITC and EVP.
Now, when you say ITC, can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, instrumental transcommunication.
Okay.
That EVP is essentially a form of that.
Okay.
Instrumental transcommunication, quite honestly, when you break it down, it means things. EVP is some electronic voice phenomena. Generally, it's something that you record and it gets played. When you play it back, you discover something that was not there at the time of the recording when you recorded it.
Sure.
Okay. And instrumental transcommunication is things like when you get voices on an answering machine. Okay.
Uh-huh.
It also deals into the realm of the different techniques used with video cameras and televisions. It's users' experiments with foil, crowded up foil. And recording that with light sources. I mean, it's incredible how far
it gets. I've never even heard of that.
I haven't either.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's just, it is a whole other genre.
Now, would that also include, like, the obelisk, device?
Obelisk, yeah. The obelisk device from Digital Dowsing. That one, yeah, that's two-way communication. That
sure.
is something that would be more ITC than EVP oriented, although the definition of EVP is expanding, as we speak. It generally deals with recorded things. Obulus, yes.
Now,
that,
now
is a,
your,
that is
an
ITC ITC device. So, I'm sorry, I forgot. I lost my point. What was I getting? I'm sorry.
Talking about ITC, kind of giving it a description of it.
Okay, yeah. And to wrap it up, you know, ITC comes from things like hearing voices from static noise, for instance, like auditory disembodied voices, things like that. You can get some profound experiences from just listening to a waterfall, just for the fact that noise covers a wide spectrum of sound frequencies that can be utilized and manipulated in theory by the spirit world. Okay, some of them are hallucination oriented. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it all depends, you know, if you're smoking a left-handed or right-handed cigarette. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
but nonetheless, I mean, look, let's be real about this. Look, go back to the Bible. You know, Moses got a, you know, listen, you heard a voice from a burning bush.
True.
It was God. Now, I know for a fact, I mean, for example, Alexander McRae did a burning bush experiment. When you light something on fire, you're going to get an array of frequencies. Those array of frequencies can be, in theory, manipulated from the spirit world. That's why when we go in, you hear people working with white noise.
Yeah.
Working with white noise to charge an atmosphere, working with white noise while they're recording. It's essentially it's about presenting all of those possibilities and all of those noises and all of those frequencies to be available for use by the spirit world that can, in theory, can manipulate into communicating.
Hmm. Wow, you've opened up another hole.
Can of worms.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think any of us had heard of the other, you know, ITC. Is that what you called it?
Yeah,
I've never heard of that.
So now we have another avenue to start kind of learning about. But
cool.
I hadn't thought of it that way. But you brought up some cigarettes. Do you think that at times, perhaps, well, they used to use LSD, for psychiatric purposes. I mean, that's
right.
Why it was developed.
You go with the Indians using...
Well, peyote.
Yep.
That is opening you up to another whole realm or dimension that, you know, would make it perhaps easier for spirits to you know, communicate with you.
I would not say open. When I say open up another dimension, what I would say is, and this is just from what I've heard, mm-hmm. nothing that I've experienced, of course.
Okay. Yeah.
But nonetheless, yes. What it does though is it opens up your mind to experience things you normally wouldn't. We as human beings, especially the older we get, just like you hear of kids, you know, children are more susceptible to being psychic.
Yes.
The older you get, oh, I got a car payment. Oh, I got a mortgage. I have, you know, I got to make things right with my spouse. You know, mm-hmm. I got to, you know, work. Am I going to get fired? You know, all these different things that every human being deals with. That is a load of bricks that we all have to bear as adults, okay?
Yeah.
And if you want to talk, you know, quite frankly, if you want to talk about those kind of things where, which is essentially a way, from what I understand, is for people to really open the floodgates, essentially, and to be able to once again, almost as a child, to open those floodgates of sensitivities and to be able to experience things that we cannot when we are so entrenched with the day-to-day BS.
And the taboos that society has put on things.
Yeah,
you know, you grow up and you think, well, I'm not supposed to be able to do this. I'm not supposed to believe in this kind of stuff. Because
it's so interesting because today this is you know, it's more open. You know what I mean? People are more open to listening to it due to the, you know, the social phenomenon that's going on. But however, it's not even what other people think. It's just what happens to yourself as a person. Yeah. You don't have to worry about the intangibles.
Right.
The things that you cannot hit with the hammer, the things that you don't get in the mail, you know, and things of that nature. You're so entrenched to worry about the day to day, week to week. How am I going to get this done?
Yep. How am I going to pay next month's gas bill?
Yeah, exactly. And you really can't think, you know, and your mind gets closed to so much, you know, and I'm a victim of that too. And it takes a lot of training, meditation, thought to get out of that. And you know, that is a very important part before anybody goes out to do that. As I've said before, conscious observation. We're not hunting. We're not investigating. We just want to be witnesses.
Yeah.
Now, just real quick, if anybody has a question out in the audience, local numbers 304-214-1600 out of the area, toll free 866-514-1600. Jordan, you have a question?
Yeah, actually, what is your, because you've been doing this for a long time, you know, you're not, this ain't your first rodeo when it comes to the things of paranormal. When you go to do your EVP, we were told when we first started that it's not really important what you ask. It's just, you know, the energy of your presence is what's going to bring your voices. What kind of stuff do you ask and how do you go about it?
That's to me.
Yeah.
No. Very good question. And again, yeah, that is very important. I honestly and truly believe as a person, you really have to center yourself spiritually. And center yourself, center your mind, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what I like to do is just think of a blank chalkboard, okay? Blank chalkboard, okay? And think about the task in hand. And the things that I like to ask, and yeah, I don't like to stir it up. You see on television over and over the provoking.
I think that's ridiculous.
It's just disgusting, quite frankly. And I was watching a show over the weekend, and first and the last time I'm going to watch it. If you're so bad, do it to me.
Yeah.
And that, you know what? Pack up your gear and go home. No time for that. Good luck with that, partner, because ain't going to happen.
Just it's, once, I'd like to see, though, a spirit come and really knock their ass into a wall, you know?
I was so ready to see him get knocked down the stairs. That is no joke.
I
but,
know.
You know, it, think about this. If you're gone, and if you're on the other side, and you're somewhere where you can have a chance to speak with the living, are you gonna respond to things like, you know, come on, bring it on, you know, confrontation-oriented stuff? No, I'm going to want to talk to cool people.
Yeah.
Not the meatballs that are out there spitting that garbage. Okay.
I agree with you.
What I try to do is just be very simple. And a theory that I use and employ, and that I try to tell people to use, is the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yep.
Keep it simple, and that is going to provoke the most response. Of course, what is your name? What color are your eyes? How old are you? What year is it? And things like that. I use several different methods to try to gain captures, but you know what? None of them are offensive, and none of them are really provoking, because that is not going to get you anywhere. And if it gets you somewhere, you know, it's going to do it on a very limited basis. Because it boils down to this: how would you got to treat the other side, the spirits, as you want to be treated? Because if you believe, if you're in this, you obviously believe that there's a spirit realm, and there are disembodied personalities, okay? Just like people that are out every day. You know, people respond a lot better to
sugar than to vinegar.
Exactly, sugar than to vinegar. You know, be nice. Just be nice.
Now,
be nice, and you're going to get, you know, and that is the best way to go about it, in my opinion.
Now, this could segue really easily into your EVPs, because I listened to them before we came on the air. We'll do that. I have one question from NY Lily on the chat room. She says, the voices that come through, how can you tell if these are from ghosts, or could they be from an alternate dimension with physical beings?
Wow.
That's a good question.
Yeah, very good. Good question. My theory is this. Okay, now when you dimension, I mean, if you want to talk about quantum physics, or what? Because that's a whole another hour to a show that we don't have. In short, let me say this. You really can't. Most of the time, the things that I have captured have been, I think, disembodied personalities of people that have passed on. I've spoke. I'm a paranormalist, and I am very much involved in ufology, psychic phenomena, and cryptozoology. And I've had extensive conversations with great minds in science that deal with ufology, and I really like just talking. Speaking with them, UFOs and that phenomenon. Who was to say that sometimes these voices we're getting are outer worldly? I'm not talking spirit dimension. If you want to get into the big picture, you know, we are very, very, very small fish,
yes,
in a very large tank.
Yeah.
It is very much possible that we could be talking about something living, speaking through, coming through on our devices, that are, for a lack of a better terms, in our human ignorance, aliens. I mean, it is very much possible. I don't have anything that I could really say, you know, I think this is an alien.
Yeah.
However, that potential is absolutely there. And if you do not think that it's not, you're selling yourself short. Because we are dealing with something that deals so very much in the unknown. To think that there are no experts, there are no authorities. You know, I've been studying this for over 20 years. I'm not an authority. I'm not an expert. There's nobody that is. And because nobody has a grasp on it, we don't know. It's not going to happen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Or any of our lifetimes, you know. Who's to say that it's not something that is, you know, extraterrestrial? I do believe that it only makes sense that is a possibility sometimes. However, I have not experienced that yet, but I would not rule that out. And as far as, you know, dimensional, that's what I would assume. The person asked the question is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dimension. you can get into a lot of things, but what I'm talking about is, you know, spirits here on the world, and then, you know, like extraterrestrial influences.
Sure.
That are the things that I am considering that I think are distinct possibilities.
Okay. Let's take a listen to some of your EVPs. Lily, you have those up, right?
Yeah, you want to go with...
Go with whatever order you have.
Gave
yeah.
Proof. You want to explain that one before I play it?
Which one was that?
Gave Proof.
Yeah, sure. One of the things that I like to use, again, in a non-aggravating way, instead of asking questions that are going to aggravate anything or trying to provoke a response, like, you know, like, come on, bring it on. One of the things that I found most successful is just filling in the blank, beginning to say things, let's say, like the Star Spangled Banner,
mm-hmm.
Pledge of Allegiance, here in the South, the Civil War songs and things
yeah.
like that,
yeah.
and just beginning it and letting them finish. Yeah. And I have found some profound results. And this is one of them in Gave Proof.
Okay. You've excited Lola.
Well, yes, because that was when we went to the pen, that was suggested to me that I take music or just start a song from, say, because a lot of these guys were, you know, back in the 30s and 40s, start singing a song, although that could have really raised a ruckus too. But, you know, and then stop and see if they pick it up, the chorus. Because
sure.
that would have been something that they could really relate to. And that's what I took a CD player. I wanted to do the music thing because I thought music soothes the savage beast and all that kind of stuff.
Great stimulation.
Yeah, but there were just too many people with us. We were, like I said, tripping over each other, and
mm-hmm.
you were getting noises from the other parts of the cell blocks.
You're talking about the obelisk.
Well, that too. That was really irritating.
Yeah,
but
we'll get to the obelisk.
We'll get the obelisk in a little bit.
Okay. But, okay, here is Gave Proof.
And the rockets would glare, the bombs bursting in air. Gave Proof.
Yeah, you can even kind of hear a little bit of the cadence going there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, is that a Class A? No, it's not. But I'll tell you what, if that is a stray radio signal, I'd bet the bank on it. I really doubt it. I really doubt it. And mind you, this is what, you know, the stuff that I fired over today is just a small part. I mean, I have hundreds and hundreds of examples. And these are some good ones, don't get me wrong, but just listen to it. And understand that you're not having a person that has a voice and a mouth right next to the recorder. These are imprints. These are imprints. And, for that to come through and sound like it did to me was pretty stunning. Was pretty stunning.
Yeah. Can we play that one more time?
Sure. Okay, here we go.
And the rockets would glare, the bombs bursting in air. Gave Proof.
I mean, the thing that gets me is that it's the cadence
yeah.
of it. Can't really make out the words, but it, you know, you can kind of tell.
You can definitely hear. Music still
to
going.
Me, what it sounds like is Gave Proof through the night.
Yeah.
Not word for word, but that, right, what you're hearing are not acoustic phenomena. That is nothing to do with acoustics, okay?
Uh-huh.
It has something to do with an energy imprint. And that energy imprint is pretty darn good. Pretty darn good.
Okay, let's go ahead and we'll move on to the next one here. KLP Bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a little bit of a background on that?
Okay, this was taken. This is from the USS North Carolina. I'm in North Carolina, and one of my favorite places to visit is the battleship North Carolina. I've spent many, 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 many nights, many more than my wife would like to admit, on the battleship North Carolina. And a lot of nights I've come up, you know, reeled in an empty stringer. Some nights, not the case. This EVP was actually gathered by a colleague that I was sitting in with. And she, KLP, Chrissy Lynn Perry, she had captured this. This came after a question about the people in the, okay, what had happened with the Battleship Carolina torpedo hit the shower room and several people died. And in that time, you know, again, several people died, and that the question was something, was oriented towards that.
Well, unfortunately, when I click on this, it comes up, I'm missing a component to be able to play that one.
Nope.
Yes. So what is it saying?
See, that's what I hate. I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't know, but it sounds, I'm not one that, you know, to make things up or anything like that. It is what it is.
Okay.
But it sounds like something along the lines of "we burn,"
oh,
and it
God.
Is extremely creepy. If you can get that one up at some time during the very short time we have left, I would highly recommend playing.
Well, it's asking me to download something. I'm missing a component for the player
just,
or something.
Is it just a WAV file?
Yeah, that's what it's saved as. I'll keep playing with it and see if I can't.
Yeah, it is a WAV file. Okay, no problem. Let's move along.
Okay, this is Marx Brothers.
Are you there?
Yep.
Yeah, Marx Brothers, can you?
Oh, Marx Brothers, yeah. You know, I like it lighthearted. I don't, you know, I stay away from the morbid questions because, you know, I just don't find you get very far with it. And it just, to me, is logic. It just, to me, is logical that if you want to communicate, I put myself in the case of the spirits. You're going to get a lot farther if you offer me a Snickers bar instead of vegetables.
Which is something that Jordan, the other host that's on the phone with us, and I are, you know, that's what we'll ask, you know, what's the capital of, you know, Florida?
Sure.
You know, and see if we can, what? Yeah. Yeah. What
yeah.
was that again, Jordan? Can you turn
who
up his
number two work for?
Okay. Yeah. Who's number two work for, you know, off the Austin Powers and stuff like that. You know, and sometimes you get something weird, you know, response back. So.
Sure, sure.
Let's go ahead and play that one.
So. Yeah, and this one is just where I would ask, simply, quite, you know, I mean, we spent hours and hours in this location, and I was stretching, and I was trying to think of, you know, things at the time, and I had asked, who was your favorite Marx Brother?
Can you name any of the Marx Brothers?
I'm going to play it again.
Yeah, play that one again.
Yeah, and if you can bring it down a little bit, because it's coming in a little bit hot.
Okay.
Can you name any of the Marx Brothers?
Groucho.
That's what I heard, Groucho.
Yeah.
I sent that to over 100 people, and which I like to do. I don't, you know, and I don't, when I label my EVPs, I don't, and the file names, I don't give the answer to what I think it is. Okay? I label them with, what, you know, with the question, okay? And with that, it came back 99% said Groucho. And I was not expecting a response out of that whatsoever, but you know what?
Yeah.
It's funny what you put on the line and throw out in the water and the responses that you get. And that is one of my all-time favorites. You know, Stray Radio Signal, come on now. Come on. That is not possible. That's what I would say, you know, to the amazing Randy, and, you know, and people that like to, and like people like to bury people that do what we do.
Yeah.
That is just the honest to goodness, the truth. Is it 100%? I really don't know, but come on now. Come on. We're dealing in a lot of gray areas. I'm not trying to make a name out of this stuff by any means, but listen to it, take it for what it is. And to me, it makes me wonder.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's enough.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and go to the next one here. I'm going to try to actually re-download that KLP Pullpen one on my computer one more time and see if I can get it to work.
Do you need another?
Yeah, do you have another?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, well, here is The Little Bitch.
Okay. that's the name.
You can tell I'm a frequent user of that word.
I'm so offended.
Are you?
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm so sorry.
That's one that I did have labeled because I didn't want people to be surprised, you know, when they heard it, because it is pretty much Class A, and it is what it is.
All right. Oh. So I'm excited to hear this one.
Sorry, I was getting another jump drive for him. So, okay. Oh, here we go.
If you could bring that level on that down just a little bit.
A little bit more? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try this one.
Did you hear it?
Yeah, I heard that one. That one's pretty clear.
Yep.
That one, yeah, and if you get it evened out, bring it down to about half the volume it's at. Background on that, I was with I was out with international effort. My good friend in Scotland, Mark Turner, had come over to the States, his first trip stateside, and we went up to Gettysburg. And
there we go.
Working with another friend of mine, Mark Nesbitt.
And we've had him on the show.
Mark, you know, you want to know Gettysburg as far as history or haunted history? He is the cat's pajamas. He knows what he's talking about, and nothing but respect for the guy. And I'm fortunate to be his friend. And we went to a farmhouse outside of Gettysburg that he knew to be active.
Oh, is this the one with the blood on the floor?
That narrows it down because there's a lot of blood on a lot of floors out there.
Well, there was one story we heard about blood appearing on the floor and stuff in an old farmhouse.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Said it was an old farmhouse there.
Yeah, that's the one. It needs to be unnamed because it doesn't want that kind of media attention.
Sure.
But someone there had there was blood on the floor and it disappeared.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the place, and I saw it. I had a UV light with me, and you can see the stain there.
Wow.
I mean, you have to understand, this place was surrounded. I mean, it was stacked window high with bodies at one time, and the barn out there.
It an infirmary or a hospital or something like that?
Well, no, it would be loosely, very, very loosely, makeshift. It was an estate that got What's the best way to put it? Got taken by the Confederacy and used as a field hospital, and the house was where the people that had a chance
were treated
in the barn. When you have certain wounds, you know, you get shot,
gut shot in the head,
you know, you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
At that point, people were poisoned. You know, we're talking about You know, people using infected, you know, a rag that was infected with tainted, you know, blood.
Yeah.
Infected blood. It was used again and again. And in the barn, there was people just, you know, weren't helpful, running, you know, they're unsavable, running around in the house. Didn't ask any question related to this, but let me tell you what. That voice was right on top of my recorder, and it was a whisper. And the whisper was so vindictive, and it was so hate-filled.
Wow.
You know, the little bitch. Mm-hmm. I have no idea, and Mark has no idea what it could be from. You know, we try to look at some history. But you know what? That is one of the emotional... You know, every time I hear that, I get chills, because whoever was there, they're stuck, and they are filled with hate, and they're not happy. They're not happy campers.
I'm going to play it one more time. I just want to turn my headset up.
I'm going to do it one more time. I was really sure. Yeah, you can
hear
it.
Yeah,
I heard it better
that
time.
Yeah.
It's a very
too.
Good one.
And I think we just became the only show on there that's cussed that many times consecutively.
I don't
hey,
know.
None of us cussed, though.
It wasn't us. Yeah. You want
Let
to try
the
to...
FCC try and go after them.
Yeah. We'll give you an address.
Try to find their name and address.
Yes, yes.
Now, do you want to try to do that? I put that all back on the bullpen one. Hopefully, I re-downloaded it just in case maybe something happened transferring the file. So, hopefully, it'll work. We only have a couple minutes left, so we'll try to get this one in. While
is
we're doing
there a
that,
way to put that on the website.
Yeah, do you mind if I put that on the website if it doesn't work, Chad?
No, go ahead.
All right, good.
Yankee Doodle was another one. I don't know if you played that or not.
That's the next. Yeah, we got that one. We have only a couple more minutes. I want to make sure on our website, Chad's. We have a Chad's Twitter. Austin EVP.
Austin EVP on Twitter. Sign me up. You get updates and know what's, yeah, to get an idea of what's going on with me.
And then myspace.com/Tuesday Tuesday After Twilight, correct?
Yeah, that doesn't get as much attention. I'm working on that. And right now, the best way to get a hold of me is through Twitter and my email.
What's your email address?
Austin EVP.
That's easy enough.
Yes, AustinEVP@gmail.com.
Okay.
And if I could say that I do have some really big projects coming up. A website, I'm not going to divulge the name and everything, but it is Project Do You Hear What I Hear? Project Do You Hear What I Hear consists of a big website, online community, as well as a book that I'm working on right now.
Okay.
That is going to be... is going to be, you know, an excellent read. Nothing to do with me, but just has to do with how people can, do the best that they can to be out in the field and capture audio is the bottom line.
Okay, well, we actually have no more time left.
Right, we're at the top of the hour.
But I want to thank you very much for coming on the air with us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks, Chad.
We'll have to have you back on. I wanted to get to the Yankee Doodle. We'll save that for next time.
Yeah, sure.
So, all right, well, thank you very much. We're going to go to the break. You're listening to Whispers Radio on AM 1600, WKKX, and UPRN, and brought to you by West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville.
Former West Virginia Penitentiary housed some of the most violent criminals in history. Many of the prisoners who lived there also died there. It is known for being one of the most bloody institutions in the United States. Don't miss your chance to experience the former West Virginia Penitentiary. Your tour will consist of an astonishing 90 minutes that offers an awesome history, a touch of art, cold hard facts, and an education of the justice system. Tours start 11 a.m. Tuesday through Sunday. For more information, go to www.wvpentours.com or call them at 304-843-4146.
And welcome back to Whispers on AM 1600 WKKX. The Valley's Watchdog and UPRN. My name's Nick Queen. We got Lola Miller and Garrick Sturm, who I forgot last time and is probably going to yell at me later.
That's okay, Nick.
It happens. And on the phone from Myrtle Beach.
Da da da.
Jordan.
Bum, 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 bum.
Drum roll, please.
You do that good.
So now, is it still sunny and pitiful?
No, I've walked because I got a bunch of people, like my whole family's here.
Uh-huh.
So I locked myself away in the back bedroom.
Oh, well,
so I can tell you what it's
better than a public bathroom.
I was going to send him to the beach.
A hotel bathroom. Listen, you see what I do for this show?
Yeah.
This is my love. Okay?
My plan was to send Jordan, like, okay, Jordan, we don't want to hear from you for a little bit. Get in your car, drive to the beach. We want to hear the ocean before the show's over. But he's like, I'm like 20 minutes away. So.
Did you get any fishing in, Jordan?
No, I didn't.
Well, if you go to his blog, whispersradio.com/Jordan, you'll see what Jordan's been doing here lately.
Yeah,
I think you got a picture
been doing
of him.
A
travel diary.
Yeah, I've been doing a vlog every day, every night.
You're getting very good at that. Lola and I are very busy and can't contribute any time at all. But no, you're great.
Well, these people that just laze around the beach day in and day out.
Well, I think I'll go to Myrtle Beach.
Yes.
First
I'll stop in Delaware.
I slept until like 3.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything the rest of the day.
But that's when I got angry at you, and I'm like, if he gives me any lip. So, I was going to say, we're going to read a letter we got from a listener, then we'll go to the guest.
Okay.
This letter is from, where's it at? Jessica says, hi, I'm a new listener out of Phoenix, Arizona. And I must say, I really enjoy the show. I listen via podcast. I've only heard about 5 or 6 shows, and my favorite one so far was the episode dated 6/30/2009. That was when we had Dwayne Claude and I believe Alan Swartz, if I remember correctly. My memory's a little bad now. Tim Swartz. I'm sorry, Tim Swartz. May the Swartz be with you.
God, I can't believe you just did that.
I did. I am sorry. It says, I actually listened to about 40 podcasts, most of them paranormal, and Whispers Radio has quickly became a favorite. Your personalities are great fun, and the guests are interesting, professional, and notable. I plan to listen for a long time, and Jessica out of Phoenix, Arizona, which is a nice segue. Our guest today is from Arizona. Jordan, you want to do the
honors?
The honors.
Oh, why, thank you. Alan Stern is our guest tonight. He's researched ULOs, unidentified lunar objects, for several years and collected them into a book. ULOs revealed in NASA photography are anomalous shapes that appear artificial to the lunar landscape and resist identification to known geographical features. Alan, are you with us?
I am. Hello.
Well, this is an opportune guest to have on, being as yesterday was the 40th anniversary of the moon landing. So,
And we sought him out.
Yes, we did.
To say.
Very good, guys.
Yes, you did. We had a long conversation on the phone.
He actually has an e-book out. Right now you can go to his website and grab that. And it's not a lot of money, but it's full of pictures and proof of everything that he's found and gotten. It's definitely worth it.
Actually, you're asking for donations. You're not even asking like an actual price. Is that correct?
That's correct. You just donate anything you want, and then you'll have access to the download.
Which is amazing. And the book itself is amazing. I've been looking through it and going, what the heck is that?
Now, there's also a print version in soft bound as well as hard. And those are a lot more pricey, and those are controlled.
Of course,
The printing costs. But the ebook is probably the best bet because you can zoom in. It's not super high resolution, but it's rather high resolution. And so when you see a small picture and inset or something, you can actually zoom in on your computer and check them out.
A little more interactive. Now, I've on our website I posted up the link. You actually were nice enough. You made a page with pictures that we're going to talk through today. You can go to whispersradio.com and click on it. It says at the bottom, let me refresh that. I can't remember what I wrote. Follow along, Lunomaly, Whispers Radio. Just real quick, throw it up there. And or if you go to lunomaly.com, that's lunomaly.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And click on radio shows on the left. And you'll see Whispers Radio there. And that way you can kind of follow along as we talk through these pictures. Now, can you give us a little bit of a background? How the heck did you get into this?
Well, I'm an amateur photographer. I'm a graphic designer and a web designer. And I got the bright idea one day to make a book using my 8-inch Celestron. And what I originally planned to do was to compare and contrast shots, the best shots that I could get with my telescope, with images from the Apollo missions. That's pretty much when I got my real education on how many photographs there really were taken of the moon. And there were a lot, about 40,000 Hasselblad medium format pictures alone. That's not including the thousands of pictures from the Lunar Reconnaissance, or from the other orbiter cameras that were there prior to the missions.
Uh-huh.
And so as I started getting access to these things, I realized, I had a from Michael Light called Full Moon, which is a beautiful, beautiful book of great photographs of the moon missions. And in there, I still kept seeing I saw some new stuff, but I saw a lot of the same old pictures that we'd always seen. And when I got access to these archives, I started looking around, I found out there were a lot of pictures that were overlooked, and I thought, why not make this into a book of all the unseen or never before seen pictures, the rarely ever seen pictures, maybe even damaged and messed up photographs that still had neat content in them as far as composition or what we could see in them, but just bring that to light. And that's when I started examining these high resolution photographs and adjusting them for their contrast so that they would print correctly, and I started to see pretty weird things. And that's pretty much the lead-in.
Okay. Now, going to the website, kind of going through so people can follow along. It says here, some early finds, mapping camera, and lunar surface. Now, can you kind of describe here what we're looking at?
Yeah, these first three pictures here, that top left one is some of the stuff that I started to find in the beginning that made me scratch my head.
Mm-hmm.
These perfect Pentagon-looking kind of ships. And I say perfect loosely, but perfect compared to the rest of the lunar terrain. That looks very perfect as far as a geometric shape. But, you know, the terrain is typically just looks like a World War II bombing run. It never stopped for billions of years. Matter of fact, I think that's about true. So when I saw these hard-edged lines up there, this is hardly even touched by me as far as contrast enhancement, and that dome-like shape right in the middle, that geometry stood out to me like, wow, what am I seeing here? And then I tucked that away, and there were many others. To the right there, again, there's no shadow being cast from whatever that vertical line is on the picture, but when we stop looking at that as 2D, these are mapping camera shots. They're looking straight down. That white line is like stretching over that hole.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, that's an interesting, kind of like a bridge or something.
Yeah, sort of. Bridge as the concept,
sure.
Not necessarily bridge as in somebody driving, you know, their Skylark over the top of it or anything. But
yeah, no.
And then the picture below there was taken from the chest. This was one of the pictures I had found. That's a small clip of one of the pictures that was taken from the chest height of one of the astronauts. And that's just out there in the lunar rubble amongst the crater. And to me, it looks like one of those 1950s bombshells or that big bombshell that was from the 1920s moon movie where it's stuck in the eyeball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks like a big
so
back
it's
end
proof.
Of a bullet.
Yeah, that actually happened. All
or
right.
a keg.
So and if you look up there, there's kind of a regulated appearance of toothing or like a gear-like mm-hmm. top to it. Now so I found that to be very interesting, not highly unlikely. And this is where I started to dig into lunar geology to really kind of figure out what the hell I was looking at.
Now we were talking before the show, and you mentioned that you used the definition of structure, which would be nice probably to go into right now. Before we start going into other things, when you're looking for these, you're using the you know, Webster dictionary definition of structure as being what exactly is your idea of that?
Well, roughly, right there. If anybody would like to navigate through my homepage, on there I have what I consider a ULO, and that's, you know, these are some of the definitions of structure: an arrangement of and relation between the parts or elements of something complex. A building or other object constructed from several parts. I can't say that I've, you know, for certain found a building. The quality of being organized is a very important one. And for me, an apparent form follows function that sets it apart from the nearby elements of the terrain.
Uh-huh.
So additionally, whatever they are, they have to kind of resist definition as lunar geology. And there's plenty of books on lunar geology. They're usually on a macro scale and not too much of a micro scale, and that's okay because most of these photographs are kind of macro scale, and some of the smallest stuff from the Apollo missions or from the Hasselblads taken from the command module in orbit, the smallest recognizable objects that we're talking about, or clearly recognizable objects that I found, are on the order of maybe a half a kilometer at the smallest. So
wow.
Shopping malls and about that size.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea. So when I look at them, or when I find something that stands out from the terrain, sometimes it'll look like a bunch of rubble that's toppled down from the side of a hill. Okay, well, that throws that out. Just because, I mean, even if it was something, you know, you just have to throw it out because, number one, I can't go up there and poke with my finger, so, and I have to move on. So there's an apparent birth of it up the hill. You know, it was created from some other event. But when I find stuff like... triangular wedge-like shapes laying inside of a crater that are casting a shadow, then I call, you know, into question all the... I start, you know, looking at it pretty closely to the definition of structure. How could this thing get in there and lay in there against the side wall of a crater without damaging it if it happened to have been ejected from someplace else?
Hmm.
So in other words, if there was an impact somewhere else and a large chunk of this went flying someplace... and it landed, and, you know, these are massive pieces. Why wouldn't it cause any damage? Why is it just sitting there inside the edge of a crater?
Okay.
So that's when you start to think, okay, well, this is odd. You set that aside, right? And that's basically what I've collected. I've collected a catalog. I have a catalog of oddities on the surface of the moon that do not appear like they should be the remnants of a surface material that's made up of about 12 elements, six of which are trace. So you shouldn't have too many complex looking shapes like we have here on Earth. We don't have the moon does not have the complex elemental structures on the surface like we do. You can't get Devil's Tower on the moon because there was never any water or wind erosion going by to carve it away. So when those things are around, you start to pay attention to them.
Now, let's go ahead and move on with the pictures here. It says the usual suspects, and we're looking at three different things. The shard, the castle, and the reflection.
Right.
So what exactly are we looking at here?
Okay, so when I started to realize I thought I was finding something odd, so I went looking again. I was no stranger to Art Bell from back in the day and stuff, and I remember hearing Richard Hoagland. And these were some of the things that these guys talked about, John Lear and Richard. And so I went looking, and that one on the left, the shard, I mean, that was unchallenged forever, and it could be anything. I mean, really, I have to stretch my imagination. Richard takes it to the nth degree and shows like that kind of like that little blurry thing up there might be a reflection of a glass dome or something. And then the object to the right, another one. It's interesting and all, but it doesn't have any context. I can't tell what it is and why it is, where it is.
That's the you mean the castle?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Is that floating in midair? Is that what the reflection is?
No. That's actually on the surface someplace.
Oh, okay.
And again, it's compelling in its structural, geometric design, but it's not casting a shadow. It's not. There doesn't seem to be anything leading up. There's nothing to put it in scale. It's very, very, very odd image. And then that one on the far right is the other one that everybody touts as some sort of evidence. In this case, evidence that there was some kind of cover-up.
Sure.
That in reality, somebody picked up something in the visor there that shouldn't have been. And so.
Are the shadows right? Look at the shadows in that reflection.
Yeah.
They're not right.
Well, I don't know. I've seen a lot of bunking and debunking and debunking the debunkers. And I think when all... I got into the thick of this, right away. I was all over the internet day and night trying to figure out what in the world I was finding. Which leads me into the next picture.
Yeah, the needle in the haystack.
This is fascinating.
I decided that if I was going to actually put together a book of these things, which I was just working with originally, the 2D overhead images, I had to find something unique, something that wasn't like the usual suspects, something that was what I considered unquestionable in my mind. And that's when I bumped into this. Now, to be fair, that is not the original that you're looking on the top left. That is my contrast enhanced version. You can see more of the original actually from an uncompressed TIFF image that I managed to get the next image down.
Okay.
Just to the right of the red box, you'll see those little sphere shapes sitting there.
Okay. Yeah, but you still kind of see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what I did on the top left is that was for, when I'm trying to identify the geometry of things, I get a lot of leeway because what I'm not doing is trying to suggest that that is what it actually looks like. What I'm attempting to identify is regularity or uniformity in design or shape and form. So what I did is I blew it up massively. I gave it a little bit of a blur and shrank it back down. Adjust the contrast levels a little bit, and that's how I got the one up there to the left with the colored outlines.
It's a very interesting picture.
Yeah, basically it's highlighting its geometry, but again, it's been modified by me, so I'm not making any claims that that's what it would look like if we stood there in front of it. Actually, recently I've done some analysis, and that spheroid-looking shape to the left is approximately, as far as I can tell, about twice the height of the Sears Tower.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, and we've got beeps.
No, we don't. It's all right. That's the people on the back side of the moon just telling me, go ahead, you can keep talking.
Well, we've got their permission, yeah, so we will move on.
Well, Garrick's got a question
for you.
Yes, I was just wanting to know, even though that there's only one true light source up there, which is the sun, would it cast any type of different shadows at different times when these pictures would be taken? At say you have one that you know that you took at a certain time frame, but if you would change that time frame up, would it change the image at all, or would it still be there?
Slightly. The moon has a perturber somethings. and what that is, it's a slight wobble of the moon. So it's not always in the same place, when you kick it back around 360 degrees back around the Earth to the same spot and you took that same picture, it could be off a little bit. Yes. So it isn't exact every time. Now, as far as other light sources, you have ambient light being cast secondarily off of the reflection from all the other objects, and the surface of the moon has a high silica content, so it's very reflective, very bright, kind of like the sandy beaches. And so there is kind of a glow that happens, but not enough, to cast a shadow, but it will create a little bit of a shadow amongst the edges of objects, where objects come up close to each other, you will see a shadow. So, or let's say just a darkening or a lack of light there.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, the one below that with the 1, 2, 3, 4, is that also tied into this?
Right. So moving from that red box, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm focusing in on that box with a technique that I created. And what I did is I enhanced the contrast levels, pushing the shadow detail in and in and in. That's moving from 1, which is from that red box, to 2, to 3, and down to 4. And you can see we can still capture a whole lot of detail in there. Basically, what we're doing is we're pushing the shadow detail. So where shadow detail was light, I have a technique that pays attention to shadows and only pushes those. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by push is it darkens them.
Yeah.
So now, again, we cannot assume that that's creating what we see as geometry, as in physical three-dimensional shapes. What that may very well be pointing out to us is shape and form, but it may be through texture. Take, for instance, a pipe in the distance that was banded with gray and dark gray and gray and dark gray and gray and dark gray. And when we take a picture from far away of that, process it through the film processing, scan it and get it, and we start pushing those gray values, what we might see then is a series of bright and or dark and light colored shapes, like a series of them, alternating, right?
Yeah.
What we may not ever see is the pipe, right? So that's what my eyes are looking for, regularity and consistency in its form. Okay, so when we're looking at that, we may not be seeing these things that look like a ziggurat city here from Iraq. That might very well be just texture surfaces, which is still important, because how many times do you get this kind of in number 4 there, right about dead center? How often do you get on the moon a square with a donut-like shape in the center that's sticking up with two lines leading down, crisscrossing another large area?
Yeah.
When you put it all together, it starts to look very suspicious.
Looks like a bow is what it looks like to me, like somebody tied a bow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now everybody should remember. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jordan.
Oh, I said I see that.
Oh,
I was agreeing with you, Lola. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, so everybody should remember that in all these shots, what I tried to do is, as I got away from the mapping camera shots, and I looked strictly at the oblique angle views, so photographs that were taken typically from orbit with telephoto lenses, and they often show you the horizon. So somewhere from down below out, so they're perspective shots. They're not mapping camera shots like when you go to Google Maps and you're looking straight down all the time.
Okay.
These are always at an angle. So whenever you look at any of my images, at the bottom of the image is always closer to you than the top of the image. And that could be not very far away from that distance. That could be a short distance, or it could be a very large distance if we were looking up there along the horizon line. In either case, just remember that we're always looking at these things like as if you were flying in an airplane and you're coming in to land and you look out the window and you look out towards the horizon, that's basically what you're seeing.
Okay. All right.
So when we move down to the next one, you'll see this one's a little bit easier. There's a little bit more of the local terrain involved, so you can see the context of it. That Y-looking shaped thing, I don't know what it is, but it looks like it's, I don't know, should I dare say, it looks like a spacecraft backed into a hangar.
You got a park somewhere.
Yeah, and right next to it, a dome sitting there on another square slab, and a collection of other little odd geometry. The resolution kind of falls out at that point, but you can see what I see in the colored version down below, and that's the way the book is set up, as a matter of fact. Some of the major elements I color in, but not all of them, because quite often there's many in that same scene, because again, we're talking about a little bit larger scale than we're used to. You and I and everybody out there is used to taking pictures. At the most, you're at a park and you take a picture. Sometimes, you take a picture of a landscape view of the mountains out in the distance. But usually, our eyes are used to seeing pictures of people standing inside rooms or photographs of the street with cars. This is a little bit larger scale than that, but the geometry still is there.
Now, how big is this structure that we're looking at here?
This one I have not back engineered to try to figure it out. On oblique angle photographs, it's extremely difficult because the terrain is the curvature of the moon is going away from you, mm-hmm. and there's also a certain amount of billowing from the camera lens. So it's often hard to try to figure that out. So I just haven't gotten around to figuring out all these. But I would say, if I had to guess just from experience, I would say that would probably be on the order of, size of the Los Angeles airport, maybe?
Gotcha. Okay.
Wow.
That's a pretty big place.
It is big.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, let me chime in here for a second on this idea that, why would there be such big structures? And I've ran this question by other people, and I've had debates with them, and really it boils down to this: just because let's assume that it's an alien intelligence that came by and did this, and maybe it was left for millions and millions of years, just because you have the ability to go gallivanting around the solar system or the galaxy doesn't necessarily mean you have to build everything big. I'm sure that economics and design are just as important or realistic to them as it is to us. Just because you can make it big doesn't mean it's smart, because, if you only needed a desk and you needed to move around to the other desk, you wouldn't necessarily build a stadium and put one desk on one side and one desk on the other just because you could make it big. So I got to start thinking about these things as possibly large-scale structures that held atmospheres. And, Buckminster Fuller talks about in his geodesic domes that as you double the size in these of these domes, you quadruple the airspace, and it's easier to maintain. Then, if a rogue meteorite smacks the wall and puts a hole in it, everybody doesn't get sucked out right away. You know what I mean? You've got time to go over there and plug it up. So I got to thinking about that. Just for a scale of things, things are puffy. I live in the desert in Tucson, and our old homes are quite often have. They quite often have very thick walls for insulation and structurally. And what if you're running around building in situ? What if you're building with the local materials? Then, like NASA plans to do when they go up there to start building again, when you start building with this pancake mix that the surface of the moon is made up of, you're caking it up. Maybe structurally you have to make everything big and puffy. Just maybe that's the way it looks after you build.
Yeah.
Anyways, when we moved on to the next image, what I did is I bent that image. I tried to correct it as much as I could to an overhead view. So I found the horizon lines, and I found everything that I needed to find, and I reconstructed it, bent the picture so that we had kind of an over the top view, although it's actually from the perspective view. And this is pretty important. Now, the 52 degrees, I don't think there's any relevance in that. I would have to ask somebody that knows more about geometry and the 26 is half. But what's important to me is the golden ratio, which is only found in nature or in designs by man. So when we slice this up and look at the geometry and the spacing, the 1 to 0.618 golden ratio is kind of apparent enough for me to really question this area.
Okay, and what does that, I know nothing about geometry or engineering or anything, so what is the significance of this?
Okay, so the golden ratio or the golden rectangle, when you see like a conch shell,
yeah,
or and it spirals out from the small part to the, you know, to proportionally larger and larger and larger. It's 1.618 times the size of the object before it, and so you get that shell that unfolds, or you get the pattern of flower petals, or you get the patterns of life. And the only other, you know, rocks don't do this naturally, really. Some rocks do have these. No, I don't think any rocks have the proportion. I think they have other proportions, so I could be wrong there. But usually humans, through their desire for beauty, mimicking nature, they'll use that in their designs. In architecture, as well as in graphic design, you use these same principles to slice up a page. The top portion would be, or the whole page is one, and then 0.618 or 61.8% of that page, you draw a line. And that lower box, you might put in the text, and the top portion is where you have your full page ad info. Just have a look at the full page ads next time you or look at the magazine. So it's another possible sign that there was intelligence involved in this. That's not just random stuff.
Right. Boy, I'll be able to dazzle them that next time I go to the beach.
You know, we have a question off of the chat room. Before I get to that, if you have any questions out there in the listening audience, locally, 304-214-1600, out of the area, 866-514-1600. And this one's from Tall Dwarf. He says, are these photos taken of left, front, or right side of the moon? And what's to have prevented them from going underground as well as on the surface?
All these that you're seeing, I believe this next one that we're looking at is going to be on the far side.
Now, is that just so we can make sure everybody's following along, the title of it's the Bright Lunar Ring, is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
I think, you know, I might have my front and back messed up, but I think that's on the far side.
Okay.
It's hard to say. A lot of the far side imagery isn't all that great a quality.
A little darker, I'm guessing, correct?
Well, actually, you know, the back of the moon gets just as much light as the front of the moon.
Oh, okay.
We never get to see it.
I don't listen to too much Pink Floyd. I'm sorry.
Yeah, now, as far as underground, I'm not sure, like ground-based penetrating radar or something like that, maybe in some of these new science missions with the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter.
That'd be interesting.
But I know that they have what you might consider an image. You know, they did. If you watch my Anomalous Gigantus video, the YouTube video there on the website, they're referencing a bomb that they were carrying around, Gene Cernan and what's his name, and Jack Schmidt, and they're cruising around, you know, trying to find this, what they call the station, where to place this bomb, because the idea is they're going to detonate it, and then they have these seismology equipment or, you know, seismic equipment, sensing equipment out there on the moon. And I know nowadays they do this kind of a thing and they thump it and they can continuously keep thumping it and they get a 3D image of what everything looks like underground, or a rough 3D image anyway. But I don't think anybody's gotten that to do that on the moon yet.
Okay. Now we have another question from NY Lily. Give me just a second here. Does he see any connection between what can be seen on the... give me a second here. I'm reading...
So what can be seen on the moon and the structures that allegedly can be seen on Mars.
Thank you, Jordan. I kept scrolling down away from me. It was hard.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Two things. I don't pay attention to the moon, to the Mars images very much. Number one, the only ones I think in this day and age worth looking at are digital. They all pass through a civilian organization in California before they get to NASA or to any of us. I think in the realm of me looking for structure, that kind of already sets the tone that
They've been censored already. They've been censored.
Well, if that's the case, I don't know. Some people, when I got into this and people find me, you know, I sit on the phone for hours and people fill my head for all kinds of stuff. And so, yeah, some say that there's about 6 million entities living on Mars, or 60,000, or whatever the number might be. And is there evidence of them on the surface? I only saw one intriguing picture on the surface of Mars that I, and to bring it to, back to the question, I have not found anything similar to that on the moon, and that's these three vent-looking shapes that are equally spaced by like 150 feet. And I thought that that was kind of odd.
Yeah.
But you know, there's often an image that's cited as suggesting that there's a city down there, and unfortunately, from I teach digital arts, and I think that what they're, my opinion is that what they're looking at is digital artifacts of a JPEG that has been wrapped onto a 3D surface model, and then had a virtual camera in the 3D world, you know, bent pulled down and looking at it at an angle. And so what they're citing in that image, I believe, definitely it looks geometric for certain, but I don't think they're looking at the stuff on them.
So
on
are you saying that an artifact being, you know, something that's left over from the picture, but now what you're saying, it's wrapped around
it's wrapped onto a 3D surface model. So in other words, like a, you know, think of the old you know, the grid mesh, the 3D grid mesh, and then they take the photograph that they took from above and they paste it on there, and when you, you know, bend your 3D camera,
so they're kind of making it, you're saying, kind of
Well, I think they're right in suggesting that it's definitely artificial looking. I just don't think that it's evidence that somebody else made it, other than our computer equipment's ability to to render the images.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know what I mean? So it does look at, you know, it's this gray zone. it is artificial looking, but it's probably because of the digital artifacting.
Okay.
Okay, now let's go back to the pictures here. I think the one we were looking at was the bright lunar ring.
This one's pretty interesting. I haven't shown this one to the public before. It's usually in the book.
Okay.
And I get comments about this one. Nick wanted to see this one, so I decided to put it up there because he liked it.
I liked it. It was nice.
And I find it very intriguing because not only is it a perspective shot like we see, but that bright ring, that top picture, is hardly adjusted by me at all. I barely touched that. That's pretty much a native image. And so that bright ring that is on there, when I blew it up, it's about 200% enlargement there and the little inset.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. Now, whether that's a gear tooth inner edge or not, I'm not sure. I know that it seems to be parallel and perpendicular to all the other elements in the scene, which makes it very odd, such a bright ring wrapped around a tubular-like shape. Just, you know, I guess I can imagine the great, wondrous, amazing possibilities of anything could possibly happen on the moon, but, you know, when you see things like this, you kind of question why.
I mean, to me, it looks like a turbine or some kind of, I mean, you know, industrial kind of thing. I mean,
well,
of course.
Some kind of gear.
Yeah,
infrastructure, Nick, you said earlier.
Yeah, infrastructure, yeah.
I have a whole book on infrastructure from Brian Hayes, and basically he photo cataloged just about every type of infrastructure known that man uses. And it's a great visual resource to see how we build, how things look engineering-wise, after we've decided what function they have to do, like whether it's a cooling tower or it's an antenna, you know. And it's neat to see the whole collection of those. Okay. So another thing you might note there is the big squiggly-looking thing just below. See where the blue tubular-shaped thing is that I highlighted there?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Just below that, you'll see a series of highlights that are – it's like another little series of tubular-like shapes with little arms coming out. And I say arms loosely, not to suggest that they're, you know, space 1999 arms from spaceships or anything. But it kind of looks like a snake-like shape or a tubular-like shape, bulbous, and then there seems to be a pattern or a repeating series of spacings. One, you know, from the back, one, two, three, out to the end, four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when you start seeing things like that, that's odd. You know, this is supposed to be a volcanic region at one point in time that for, a brief but very intense period of time was just pummeled at 30,000 miles per hour with objects as small as BBs to the size of, in large buildings.
Wow.
At super high speeds. So, and then it was left, that's it. You have no atmosphere. You have no Mother Nature. You have got an occasional meteorite hitting here and there over the next umpteen years. And it should just look like a dead zone that's been beat up like a leftover war zone. That's all it should look like.
Well, I wouldn't think that there could be anything rounded. That rounded like these are.
I mean, it looks almost perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be natural to there. You know, look at the volcanoes like in Hawaii. Everything is rough, hard, jagged edges.
Mm-hmm.
There, you're right about Mother Nature. There isn't anything to round it off.
Yeah, I was just at the Arenal volcano in Costa Rica, and it had actually lit up. Strange enough, there was a UFO sighting that same day.
Oh, my
and,
God.
I was on the far side. I saw the eruption from the one side, and I just saw a candle tip. But then on the other side, we stood around those volcanic rocks, and you watch them falling down. They're the size of a car, and they're constantly falling down because it's an active volcano. They're constantly just crashing down the side of this mountain.
Yeah.
And, I looked around with the binoculars, and I got to tell you, I was looking with my moon eyes, and I couldn't find anything that looked even remotely like somebody had built it.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked irregular and natural. You can go up into northern Arizona and Utah and all that, and you'll see some stuff that you look way, way far away, and you're like, wow, that looks like something humans would make or a Frank Lloyd Wright would design or something like that. Sure, but that's because we have this super complex chemistry on our surface, and we have erosion and Mother Nature at play.
Yep, yep.
But we just don't have that up there. We have solar radiation and... solar radiation and some other stuff. Oh, so let's move on here. I see
we're because we're running very close to the.
Oh yeah, we are. Darn it.
Never
had
any fun here.
Here for my in the second volume that I'm slowly working on. It's all working. I'm working on this as much as I get donations. shameless plug.
That's quite all right, dear. That's quite all right.
This here, I want to, the second volume, I want to tie in scale a lot more. In the first volume, it's pretty much a compendium of my finds. And in this one, I want to focus a little bit more on scale. You can see right here on the edge of this crater, there's a collection of odd geometry. And I figured out the scale. I back engineered that. And you can see it based against Los Angeles, Ocean Boulevard here in Los Angeles. It's a few kilometers wide. And you can see that we build things about that size right there in the water.
Yeah.
Sure.
So.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's about the scale there. And
now, a lot of these are built on the edges of these craters. I've noticed that a lot from looking at the going through the book, which is just fascinating. If you make sure you go and grab a copy out there. A lot of them, though, are on the edges of the craters. A lot of this stuff is... placed there, built there, whatever, what have you. Is there any reason why that might be?
Well, outside of, not using the word conspiracy, but the theorists that suggest the possibility of why, if it's intelligent behavior, is for mining. Why go digging when the greater Mother Nature of the solar system has already punched a hole in the surface for you?
Mm-hmm.
So, that usually exposes elements that are down below or not as common as on the surface or maybe haven't been eroded by solar radiation for a few billion years.
Yeah. Now, any idea exactly what we're looking at on that picture? Some candidates for inclusion in ULO's Volume 2, the first one there?
I hope it's not a prison.
Yeah. We could all end up in there talking about it. So, all right, let's go ahead and move on just in case.
So the next one is what I call Anomalous Gigantus. It's my little pet name for that object. It's probably on the scale of a few Hoover dams. It's pretty large.
Uh-huh.
Wow. And it's actually a string of very odd geometry that all goes along. It's like a stitching kind of look. There's just below the double arrows there, you'll see where it's like pop, 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 pop. It's almost like a fracture, a ridgeline. But when you see where the two arrows are pointing and you pick that out in the terrain, a kind of face with the geometry on the front plus on the top. And you see on the backside, there's a hole, like a crater hole, but there's a lot of regular geometry in there. There's two triangular-like, white-like shapes back there. Mm-hmm. So that top right side, like they're going looking northeast of that first black spot when you follow in where those two arrows are. And then when you keep looking up and up and up and up, you'll see some more stuff sitting out there, including that little black triangle over that white crater surface. That black triangle with a black spot in there.
Yeah, I see
and
that.
And that's kicked up over the edge, casting a triangular shadow down on the surface.
That is
so
neat.
Just more very strange things, all in an area. Again, you can look right to the right here, and on this mound to the right, the kind of pushed up mound to the right, and you know, you may or may not see something. I mean, I see something that kind of looks like a pipe on that far right, but you just don't know. You know, but when you see a collection of these things of odd geometry all in the same place, then you start to think about it.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
If you scroll down, that's three more images from three different angles.
Yeah. Well, now, is this kind of your artist rendition of what we're looking at in that? The.
Well, I was just kind of starting to identify geometry.
Sure, sure.
And but more importantly, the next three insets are all from three different angles of the same area, so from three different photographs.
Okay. We got a caller, Lola.
Yeah, this is Tracy. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi, Tracy. I was calling with a question. I was wondering if you have a theory as to why the moon landings have stopped and why you have not tried to build a moon base.
Well, when I review my book, I think I know why. It scared
the
hell out of us.
Well, that's a good reason.
That's why he thinks there might be a prison there, and that's where Buzz Aldrin would end up or something.
Yeah, everybody's complaining about those prisons in the Middle East. No, honestly, I have no idea. And I really don't take sides on my own personal theory is something looks suspicious there. I have an open door to be told that or to be shown that this stuff is not that irregular and that it would be normal to find on the moon. Unfortunately, nobody's come out of the woodwork to tell me that. Publicly, I've been told that nobody wants to talk to me about it. I guess there's a lot of room there for speculation. And let's just hope that they didn't. If in the case that they are hiding the presence of extraterrestrials, mm-hmm. and that they tried to do this a long time ago, let's just hope that they're not a bunch of, you know, strange man-eating, things or something. Because,
and if they are, they stay there.
You know, sometimes you just don't want to open up that bag. You know, the cat is better off.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just hope that that's not the case. But I really have no idea. I really, really don't. I mean, I can entertain any number of fantastic. As a matter of fact, I made a list of about 100 theories that I came across that or were told. And they're all... how do you know? You know, you just don't know. All I want is I want to start comparing these Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter photos to the Apollo photos. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, thank you for your question, Tracy.
Thank you.
You have a good day.
So when we scroll down a little bit further, there's a clip from Anomalous Giganus past those three. You can tell those three. Those are the normal pictures. That's untouched. So I didn't adjust any contrast. So you can see the objects are there. And then if you scroll down far enough and you see the clip from the YouTube video, on the YouTube video itself, I cycle through each one of those pictures, so it kind of gives us a little movie image. So you see it side by side by side from a different angle, different angle, different angle, different angle, so you can kind of get the gist of the 3D geometry of that object.
Yeah, I'll have to try to put that up on our website a little later. So people can take a look at that. Now, that's also on yours. You have that under videos, correct?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Okay.
That's my latest video. There's the last three videos, and some people always ask this about the music. I made the music for all the latest three videos, so we'll just get that out of the way.
Very good. Well, we have time for one more picture. Now, this
what
Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter.
Yes.
For some reason, it reminds me, and let me throw that out there before. Have you ever seen the boulders out in Death Valley that, you know, they'll roll across the sand?
Yeah.
Is that kind of what we're looking at here?
Well, I found this one very interesting because there's that image of the repeating kind of zigzag pattern of the rolling rocks.
Yeah.
and from back in the day, from the 70s, found this stuff. And they had always pointed to it as signs of artificiality, or they said, you know, how could these things possibly roll out of a depression and up over the hill and back down and create this trail? This one I got particularly intrigued about. This is one of the brand new shots. It's a low resolution picture. I can't get any higher yet. But as you see the blow ups down there at the bottom, it's very interesting that they cruised so far to create such a definite line all the way over there, right?
Yeah.
And then cast almost a pointy shadow.
Yeah. What the? Yeah.
That's a
oh
good
my
point.
God. Oh. I'm so just I'm like thinking, sitting you know, here with my mouth open. This is just fascinating.
She is.
To
I can vouch for that.
Quiet.
I'm
now,
sorry.
How
far have they rolled here? Do you have any idea of the scale?
Well, not on this image because I resized it. But at 100%, I think that this particular image might be one of the ones that's at 1.4 meters per pixel. So we're looking at, you know, like 5 foot per pixel.
Wow.
So 10 pixels might, you know, 50 feet, 100 pixels, 500 feet.
Wow.
Okay, so now, but here's something I want to point out to you guys.
Sure.
Okay, take that bottom right red box. Follow that trail all the way back to where it started.
Yeah. They almost merged.
Oh, same place, it looks like, yeah.
And
what is that up at the very top of the picture? It looks like the thing at the bottom of the picture in the red box. Look all the way up to the opposite corner. See that bright little spot?
You mean on the left there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, and it'll cast kind of the same shadow, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of these little spiky things sticking up. Now, you know, things like launch pads and cooling facilities, like when they launch the space shuttle and all that, they have that stuff that goes a pipe really, really far away, and then they have another facility that's piping something all the way down. I start to see things like that. Now, I'm not suggesting that at all on here.
Sure.
But where that starts, I don't see a particular large impact. What I do see is a collection of, like, I'm following the one on the bottom right.
Uh-huh.
And you take it all the way up to that kind of dark area. There's two, like, oval-like areas, and that line starts there. It goes down, up, and just keeps going. Now, how does it roll that far without skipping?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's capable of carving that out. Now, real quick, let me put this in there. If you look at the old Russian movies, the nationalism movies about going to the moon, and when you look back and you research the 1940s and 50s and when they're thinking about going to the moon, what they did is they calculated back based on the moon is in the locale of the Earth, and the Earth is in a certain locale of around the sun, and there is so much solar dust that lands on everything. They can count it here. They know how much it is. You know, how many inches of it per year. It's very small. And so when they calculate that back, they say, well, the moon doesn't have an atmosphere, so it should have been caked up with a bunch of dust. And that's why the ladder didn't go all the way down on the landers. They didn't want it to bend and get kinked up. And then when you look and you find out that Chrysler, was busy creating these prototypes for lunar modules that would move along.
Yeah.
They all dealt with like 8 feet of lunar dust. They had screws on them that would like turn and pull the craft forward because they thought they were going to be landing in so much dust. And then when they started sending the Ranger rockets up there impacting the surface, they found out that there wasn't enough dust. So back to Tracy, you know, there are plenty of theorists out there, conspiracy theorists, that suggest that the moon was brought here. And one of the theories that holds that up is that the moon's supposed to have a whole bunch of dust on it, and it doesn't.
See,
and there's no wind and no erosion, and there's nothing blowing it off. So where did it all go?
And I hate to say this, but that we're pretty much out of time.
Yeah,
especially
we are. Darn
that.
It.
We're gonna have to bring you back because you dropped the, you know, that was brought here.
Yes.
And then we're like, well, we got to go. So, but it's been very interesting. Now, at the
drop
bottom of this page, go donate a couple dollars, get the book. It's well worth $40-$50, but
definitely, I
mean, you know, a dollar. I've been looking at it for the last 2 days. It was great. It's been a lot of fun, Alan. thank you for coming in. We'll have to get you back.
Oh, absolutely.
I enjoyed myself. Thanks, Alan. We could do this all night long if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. We could go pretty probably good. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Next week, we have Lawrence Joseph. We're going to be talking about 2012, different theories of what's going to happen. Are we all going to die? That kind of stuff. And
it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is going to be fun. Let's talk about our deaths.
Yeah, we've had tons of fun. Are we all going to die?
You see how Jordan is? Dump him. Get rid of him. No. And Christian Fedor, calling in from Sydney, Australia. He's the director of iCard down there. Going to be talking about abductions.
Abductions.
Wow. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right.
So another Australian. It was fun last time.
I love listening to them talk. Lacey coming in?
Yeah, she'll
boy.
Be here. All right. And I'd like to thank Garrick for coming in. And
yes,
Jordan,
absolutely.
We got to go.
Thanks
so,
for guys having me here.
So do your thing.
Till next week, everybody. Don't be afraid. Only believe.